This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo coming to you live for the Built for Tough studio on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. Boomer had a Jets question for me. He is just entering the studio as we speak. He's going to give me that Jets question, but I just saw Pete Hoffman out there, the producer of BT and Sal, is also the Giants radio network in-studio producer. So he was out in Pittsburgh last night watching that game and then flew back, landed here at 3:30, came in, said he had to drive around for a couple hours to find a spot.
A couple hours?
That's what he said. And then he spent an hour talking to Fliegelman. So 3 hours he could have been sleeping. He was looking for a spot and talking to Fliegelman.
That guy's dedicated, though.
He is.
Flies back from a game. He's here. He's going to do his job.
I took yesterday off.
Shift. He did?
Yeah, I took yesterday.
Well, he had to be out in Pittsburgh.
No, I know, but I'm just, yeah.
I mean, Big Tongue is definitely all in.
He is. All right, so all what's right. This? We also got to get to the Giants as well.
Yeah, no, so just a quick Jet thing, and I don't know if it's just me. I thought watching the game on Sunday, why is it that every time Aaron Rodgers, at least on Sunday anyway, and I went back and watched the tape yesterday, so it did confirm what I thought. As the game's going on, I'm watching him throw the ball to Garrett Wilson, and Adam Archuleta was doing the game as, you know, extolling the virtues of one Garrett Wilson. I'm like, why does he always catch the ball and fall down? Literally every catch that was in the field of play, he caught the ball and fell down.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah.
So I went back and watched. There was one play on the sideline where he went up and grabbed it, made a nice catch, and he was knocked out of bounds. But the other catches were all in the field of play, and I guess he felt like he had to go down to get some of these catches. And there was one that, you know, one of the first ones where Aaron hits him down on the 2-yard line. And then the touchdown pass to Conklin came after that. But, you know, he's running. He should, like, catch it and go right in the end zone.
He's not a yak guy.
Yeah, I wonder, I don't know, and I was thinking about this as the year has gone on here. I don't know if it's a reoccurring thing with him. I just wanted to go back and watch the tape yesterday.
Think he doesn't want to get hit?
I don't know what it is. It's just a weird thing. And you know, some of the passes were low. Some of the ones he's got to go down and get. I know that. But it just seems to me, I don't know, I just felt really that he was not like comfortable like grabbing the ball and running with it as opposed to securing the ball, which I guess is the most important thing.
Yeah, if you didn't get enough Jets on Sunday, you get more on Thursday.
Yes.
You don't have to wait that long to get more Jets. I got to double check this because I saw this post on X about the spread for this game. And
I just wondered, do you agree with me or no?
I haven't looked at it that much, to be honest with you. And you went back, you looked at the tape. I didn't look at the tape.
Yeah.
I think I know what you mean. I feel like I've seen a lot of that. But I will keep an eye on it going forward.
It's strange.
How are the Jets favored in this football game? How? I mean, I haven't seen a ton of Texans football this year. I've seen every snap of the Jets.
Well, the Texans are 6-2. Steph Diggs is probably not going to play. He's their leading receiver in terms of catches. Nico Collins and Tank Dell will play, it looks like. C.J. Stroud had a bad road game at Green Bay, but has come back with two solid games. Their defense is second in the league in yards given up, but they do give up points. You know, and I think everybody's, I don't know, the money, that means the money's got to be on the Jets.
Yeah, I mean, if you were making this spread for this game, what would you,
I would say the Texans like by 3.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. 2.5, Texans minus 2.5, Texans minus 3. It's Jets minus 1.5. How, they don't deserve to be favored in any football game right now. I mean, they just lost to the New England Patriots. They're the one team, I think, that could actually lose to the Carolina Panthers.
Well, you saw the stats that showed you that they dominated the Patriot game. And in a game in which the stats were so one-sided, teams are 750-0. I think Dan Orlovsky put this out yesterday.
Yeah. Samini had something similar too about right. Like a team has never lost a game in the history of the NFL with whatever they had an advantage in statistically, whatever it was. Bottom line is it was just a freakish loss, which I think kind of makes it worse that you could be that much better than the opponent and still lose.
Yep.
Is insane.
You know, I watched the Steelers. We all watched the Steelers Giants last night going back and forth. I'm like, the Jets got hammered by that Steeler team.
Yeah, they did.
And that Steeler team's okay. They're good and they're solid. They're going to be always going to be solid on defense. But I felt like the Giants screwed themselves more than the Steelers stopped them.
Yeah, a couple of things. The penalties were insane. They couldn't get into a rhythm offensively because of them, whether it's a legal man downfield or a legal shift or whatever the hell's going on. And then, you know, there's a couple of times when they get down into the red zone and you're talking about, you know, fourth and two, or like around the 12, you know, fourth and three on the 8. And they're going and kicking these field goals. And I'm like, all right, I understand the Steelers are kicking field goals. And I understand that you got your ass handed to you last week. You only scored 3 points. So you're down there. You want to get some points. But you're 2-5. You're on the road. Like, play a little more reckless or a little more by the seat of your pants and make some of these decisions if you want to go in there and win the game.
Do you trust your quarterback to do that?
Yes, because he was going down the field. He was making throws. Now,
Brian Daboll is coaching his ass off. That's all I can tell you. He is trying to manufacture things, trying to keep the team in games, not letting them lose focus. I mean, they come out in the second half. They have a horrendous drive. They punt the ball. Next thing you know, it's a touchdown.
Yeah, and there was one throw that kind of sums up Daniel Jones, and he wasn't terrible. Like, he was terrible against the Eagles, and the offensive line was better, and they made a couple changes, but it was in the second quarter, and they're driving down the field. And I think it's like a 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8. He's got Darius Slayton wide open, what should be a, you know, back shoulder throw because the, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and because Troy Aikman did the exact right thing. And if you listen to what Troy said, he goes, Daniel needs to see it before he throws it.
Mm.
Yeah. That's, you got to anticipate it. You got to feel it. You got to have like a sense about you. And Troy was right in his criticism. You know, and I don't think they like doing Giant games, to be honest with you.
Well, who does?
And it's not because he's a former Cowboy. It's because, you know, he wants to see good football. Now, I think they saw competitive football last night. There's no question about that. You know, but, yeah, I mean, that's the frustration with Daniel. And then, of course, the interception at the end, he overthrows. And it goes into Beanie Bishop's hands. But I don't know. I feel bad for Brian Daboll because I think he's busting his ass and I think he's trying his damnedest. And even like, you know, on that strip sack with T.J. Watt at the end of the game, you know, Brian Daboll's like, we're supposed to have the tight end over there. We're supposed to shift over there and Daniel didn't do it. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
And in year six, it makes it even more mind-numbing. So it's just really the question is, who is going to be the quarterback next year and how are they getting that person? And will John Mara allow Brian Daboll and Joe Shane to...
I hope he does.
I do too. I want them to stay, but that's those are the questions with the Giants right now. And it's like they're not like... And why are they so... And I know they lost by 8 last night, but, you know, why are they so much more competitive on the road and they can't do anything at home? Like, they came out and were like going, you know, blow for blow with the Steelers in the first half. You know, the game was relatively close. It's 9-9 at half. The, you know, at home, the last time we saw them at home, it was what, you know, whatever it was, 28-3. It was horrible.
Yes.
You know, at the game, watching them getting completely steamrolled. I mean, they are so, they can't score touchdowns at home. It really is amazing to me how that works.
You know, they are one of, I think, 5 teams that haven't won at home. They're one of 5 teams that have an 0-4 record at home. Now, of course, the Carolina Panthers are one of those teams. The Giants are one of those teams. Do you know who the other three teams are? One is pretty obvious, I think.
The Dallas Cowboys?
Yep.
The New Orleans Saints.
Nope.
I don't know.
Oh, you got the Tennessee Titans.
Okay.
And you have the most shocking one of all, to me anyway. But Dallas is shocking, and they've gotten trounced at home. The other one, the Bengals.
Oh, yeah.
The Bengals are 0-4 at home. Should have known that one. Now, they have the Raiders at home this year. I mean, this week.
Well, CBS Sports Network just put up three teams that, you know, started out 2-6 and made the playoffs. And it's back up there. Look at that. And two of them happened since 2020. So there's hope, Jets and Giants fans. Come on.
Oof.
Oof is right. All right. Let's go to Mark in Basking Ridge. What's going on, Mark?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Look, I think Brian Daboll's a very good coach. I see a lot of good signs from him. But the question I have is, if we make that assumption that he's a good coach, why are they having so many pre-snap penalties and just, like, you know, not thinking clearly? It just seems like there's something missing there.
Yeah, formation penalties are crazy. Illegal man downfield penalties are crazy. Usually what happens with illegal man downfield, the offensive linemen are thinking that the ball's coming out quick, or there's a wide receiver screen, or there's some other screen that's happening. And sometimes they leave a little bit early. And if you have an offensive line that's going to be in flux, you know, that could possibly happen. But, yeah, I don't know. I think it's frustrating for Brian watching him on the sideline. And I think it's frustrating because players are not doing what they're told to do. Like, that two-point play is a prime example of, obviously, either Daniel going too fast or the player is just not being told what to look for. The one thing I will say that when I was at the best of my game and in the best offense that I ever played in for about 6 years, we kind of knew everything that was going on. And every now and then, we'd have a problem. We might have a bad game here or there, but for the most part, I always thought we were a really smart team where everybody on the field knew what we were doing. It wasn't just me and maybe just the center. I mean, everybody knew. And I felt that was due in large part to the coaching that we received, that it was rehearsed over and over and over again. And that play, that two-point play last night, makes me think, like, where's the awareness?
Yeah, I mean, it almost looked like they didn't practice it. Like,
I think they did. Unless they were all waiting for a signal from Daniel Jones, that could have been the case. Like, there could have been a, hey, like, I'm going, and so let's go. And maybe he didn't do that. I mean, for some reason, Highsmith was not offside, and he read it perfectly.
I mean, if there's one play to sum up New York football in 2024, that is the one.
That is it.
Let's go to Steve in Connecticut. What's going on, Steve?
Hey, what's up, guys? Long-time listener, even longer Giants fan. Question kind of more probably geared towards Boomer with your experience playing, and we've talked about it this morning already. Do you see it more, the situational awareness, the play calling? You see these third and longs that they keep getting burned on. Is it more the right play call at the time, or is it the Giants players just not acting right, not knowing their role and stuff, and just
here's the deal.
Up on that
here's the deal. You know, I'm going to say something here that it's not shocking to people, but you put Patrick Mahomes on this team, they're competitive. You put him on this team, they are competitive. They're competitive because he can handle just about anything on the field. Now, that is the extreme. I mean, he is the best player at the position, even though maybe his statistics aren't showing it. You know, you would say that Jared Goff and Lamar Jackson and Joe Burrow and Josh Allen and all those guys and their statistics. But you put Josh Allen on this team, you put Patrick Mahomes on this team, they are so much more competitive. And the reason for that is it's a subtle thing, it's a nuanced thing, and it's something that it's felt in the building. And it's felt by everybody from the front office to the coaching staff to the training staff to the players themselves. And that is an unwavering belief in the quarterback and that he's going to get the job done. And he's not going to overthrow people. He's not going to miss people. He's not going to forget to move a tight end over to help the tackle because the tackle thinks he's got help. And when the tackle thinks he's got help, you know, he's not looking behind him to see whether or not the guy is there. You know, you would think that there would be communication between those two guys. But there has to be an unwavering belief that the guy behind center is going to make the plays. Now, I think the opposite is happening with the Jets. Like, there's too much belief that the guy's going to get the job done.
Yeah.
Like that, and Aaron is not, he's not drafted by the Jets. He hasn't been here for 15 years. He's been here for 15 minutes. You know, he's not like Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, and Patrick Mahomes, where the entire team, when they go to that facility and they practice, they have the most important piece that they believe in, that the guy is going to get the job done and that he is going to be buttoned up come Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday night, Friday, whenever the hell they're playing. And the Giants just unfortunately do not have that with Daniel Jones, and the scoring reflects that.
Yeah, and just a positive shout out once again, because I feel like this guy deserves it every week, is Dexter Lawrence. He is the best football player in New York. And since Aaron Donald retired last year, he's the best defensive tackle in football. He really is unbelievable.
And you saw them getting on the defensive backs, didn't you?
No, oh, yeah.
Screaming and yelling at him on the sideline.
Yep.
He's probably had enough.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't. You know what I was thinking about is him, like, requesting a trade.
You know, I don't think he's that kind of guy. I think they're paying him a lot of money. I think he enjoys, if I go by everything that he said, the way he acts, I hope that he enjoys being a New York Giant. I really do.
Yeah. Well, I enjoy watching him. He's the one bright spot on that team. Well, him and Neighbors. Really like watching Neighbors, too.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
Hi, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. Jerry Recco is here, and he's got another update for us. What's up, Jerry?
Good morning. Brought to you by Hard Rock Bet. Download the Hard Rock Bet app and roll with us. We're also brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Morristown, and we're talking lots of Yankees, Dodgers, Game 3 of the World Series to L.A.
3-2. Swung on, a little bloop over first down the right field line, and it is going to drop in for a base hit. Edmonds scores. Well, we were kidding about baseball being a game of inches. That was a pop fly off the hands. He swung inside out. Good pitch by Schmidt. Little pop fly scores the run. You give Betts an RBI, and the Dodgers take a 3-0 lead.
And there was no comebacks on this night for the Yankees. John Sterling with the call.
And the breaking ball. There it goes.
That didn't go, though. No, it did not. Freddie Freeman had the two-run homer in the first inning, along with Betts. Kike Hernandez, an RBI single. His was in the sixth. Walker Buehler, 5 innings for the win. Freeman has been ridiculous. Another home run, 3 in a row in these games. Here's Gavin Lux.
It's been really fun to watch him do what he's doing after everything he's gone through this year. So he's the ultimate competitor, and, you know, he's just... It's Freddie Freeman. Nothing.
He is locked in, man.
He is.
He is so locked in.
It is hard to argue.
And man, what a time to be locked in. I mean, that's unfortunately not. That's not what is happening for the Yankees. I mean, although Stanton's actually doing well,
Stanton's been great. There's no question about it.
Not like this. This guy is a once in a lifetime moment. It feels like.
Since you brought up Stanton, I will tell you he is our thriving player of the game.
The 0-1. Lined hard down the left field line toward the stands. It is a base hit right in the corner. Stanton goes to second, and he is there with the double.
Now, he didn't score because he was thrown out at home, and he didn't drive in any runs, but he's been great. I could have given it to Alex Verdugo, who hit the home run in the ninth, but it was in the ninth, and it was what it was. So Stanton, our thriving
very controversial thriving player of the game here, Jerry.
I would agree,
yeah.
But I think
sending shockwaves throughout our listenership.
He has been their offense in this postseason. Brought to you by Thrivewell, New York's premier infusion and injection center, saving lives drip by drip. Visit ThrivewellInfusion.com. I mentioned him being thrown out. We've talked about this last hour on the Volpe base hit. Here was Stanton. He says he wasn't surprised that he was sent rounding third.
I got to be rolling as I'm expected to be sent. Wasn't sure if he had to go left or right on that from my vantage point. But I think in that situation, two outs, you gotta roll the dice on it.
They did roll the dice, and they lost. And they lost the game. Here was Clark Schmidt. He took the loss. He gave up three runs in just 2 2/3. A little nervous out there, maybe?
Not nerves. It's more just like, you're just so geared up and you're ready and excited to get out there. And then maybe I just felt like I was a little too quick throughout the night mechanically, just speeding up.
Okay, fair enough. Then there's Aaron Judge. He took another offer on the evening. How are you dealing with these struggles?
It's all about the team. You know, it's like I said, I'm not doing what I need to do for the team. So just got to step up, you know, take my walks when I can, try the baseball if I get something to hit. It's that simple.
Boy, wouldn't they love to see that, driving the baseball again.
I think about Stanton. I know he's 14 of 47, as they show it on CBS Sports Network right now, batting around 300. He's also had 5 walks, so he's been on, I believe, base every single game in the playoffs.
Pretty good.
On base 19 times.
And impactful home runs.
Yeah.
Okay, here's Anthony Rizzo. They're down 3-0. There's no excuses. You got to go out and find a way.
It's not going to be easy for sure, but no, we got to pull some inspiration from somewhere. So it's happened before. Teams come back before, and it's going to stink tonight. But tomorrow when we show up, we'll be ready.
Did you guys see the same? Did I see the graphic right? 24 times in the World Series, teams down 0-3. 21 of them, they were swept.
Yeah. Yeah, 21 out of 24.
That'd be 10 times teams have come back or something?
No, they've never come back.
Zero. No, 0 times. Not one time. No,
well, that was not in the World Series. That's not the World Series. Oh, World Series, 24 this. Times.
Okay.
They've been swept 21 and lost in 5 the other 3.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Not a good so place to be. The team that is down is basically showing no fight and giving up. Is that what this Yankee team is?
I don't know. It certainly didn't look great last night, but when you're losing, it doesn't look great. So who knows? You got Luis Gil making the start tonight. Los Angeles will go with a bullpen game as they charge it out.
You guys notice that Ken Rosenthal is starting to look like Bruce Springsteen if Bruce Springsteen was shrunk in the dryer?
Ken Rosenthal is Bruce Springsteen?
I'm telling you right now, his side profile looks exactly like Bruce Springsteen if he was somehow shrunk. It's especially his side profile.
All right, I literally just Googled Ken Rosenthal side profile picture.
I'm telling you, when this is in your...
I can see what you're saying.
When you think about it tonight, when he does the dugout interviews,
I can't.
Watch it tonight, and I guarantee you will agree with me.
I can see what you're saying.
But has Bruce gotten ever older, worn a bow tie?
Has nothing to do with it. It's just his straight head face.
I thought you were going to say Pee Wee Herman.
No, no. When he was younger, Pee Wee Herman. Now,
okay,
he's morphed into a tiny Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, the nose, definitely.
It's crazy. And like the way that he like looks, the side profile. No, it's this. Yeah, it's, but that's not quite it.
But it's not, but you can see where you're see going it. With it. Yes.
Yeah, but when you see the side profile today, what he's it's always with the dugout interviews. it's nuts.
Wow.
That was pretty funny.
I mean, I said it like I was thinking it, and then I said it in front of like 4 people yesterday. I'm like, oh my God. Like, I hadn't thought about that. Now it's all I see is Bruce Springsteen.
And current day Bruce.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Not born in the USA, Bruce.
No.
With a full head of hair.
Nope.
The Giants were in Pittsburgh last night, so we were talking about this 2-point try. I hope CBS Sports Network has it, because if you haven't seen it, you have to. It was pretty awful.
Giants go with the swinging gate. They've got the offensive lineman all out to the left, and they try to throw a wide receiver screen to Neighbors.
Was he offside? The defender just runs across the line of scrimmage. It didn't even look like he saw the snap. Oh, my gosh.
No one blocked him.
No one blocked him.
They didn't move. So that was about as bad could be. That was what, after the Tyrone Tracy touchdown where he ran for 45 yards. By the way, Tracy on the day before he went out and into concussion protocol ran for 145 on the night. He was really good. But the Steelers beat the Giants 26-18. Russell Wilson, 20 of 28, 278, a touchdown. Calvin Austin, the go-ahead 73-yard punt return for a score and the 29-yard touchdown catch in the fourth. You had the strip sack of T.J. Watt on Daniel Jones. Here was Brian Daboll. What happened on it? And why was T.J. Watt not doubled? He gives you a pretty good explanation here.
No, it wasn't a check. He was going, you know, pressure situation was a clock. We had a shift with the tight end to get back over to Watt, and we didn't get the shift. So we talked about it in the locker room. you know, it's, you know, DJ feels terrible, to be honest with you.
And then he said as much and took responsibility for it. Dable says Jones knows he screwed up.
I know he's going to own it. He came up here to say he owned it. There was a shift that was accompanying the play. He was kind of seeing, surveying the coverage, deciding what he wanted to do. And we didn't get the shift.
No, they did not. And he was strip sacked.
Yeah,
and then
so
he threw...
Illuminor thinks that he's going to have help.
Yeah.
So Illuminor is put in a really, really tough position. So this is the problem. You have 11 guys out there. They all have to be on the same page. They all have to understand what's going on. So if Illuminor thinks that he's got help on the outside, you know, he's going to take an inside set. And TJ Watt's so fast, he's going to go outside, and it's almost like it's a swinging gate. So everybody looks at Illuminor, oh, that tackle sucks.
Yeah.
Well, the tackle thinks that he's going to have help, and that's why he's playing that position that particular way on that one play. And it looks bad on Illuminor, but it's because the quarterback didn't communicate and get the guy over where he was supposed to be. Pisses me off.
Jones, who had his eighth straight primetime game without throwing a touchdown pass, threw for 264 yards, but had the two turnovers late. That's strip fumble, but also you had the interception that ended the game. Here he is. They're 2-6. Guys must be miserable.
Nobody really cares that we're frustrated. It's, you know, what are we going to do from here, and how are we going to fix the issues? So certainly look at myself first. See where I can do that.
We shall see. Here was Mike Tomlin. This goes back to TJ Watt and coming up just with big play after big play.
I'm not surprised by it, but it doesn't mean that it's not appreciated. I just come to expect it because he's got unique talent. He's got a unique approach. And so usually that produces unique results.
There you go. A lot of uniqueness to TJ Watt. Russell Wilson. 20 of 28, 278 and a touchdown. It sounds like they love each other. This is going great in Pittsburgh.
We got great belief. We got unwavering faith in one another. I think our practice habits have been really exceptional, and we got to continue to grow on that. And every day, we've done a really good job of that. And we got to press in. We got to continue to press in. There's more touchdowns out there. There's more plays. There's more things, and we'll do that.
Got to press in.
We all know the dude weird, strange guy, don't know what's going on with him, got a little slimy handshake, but he out there throwing the football, so we're going to deal with that other stuff. I don't know, man, I know, I just, the Mr. Invincible or whatever, the press in, all that stuff, everybody hates his guts, but we win in games. Questions?
They are 6-2. They are winning games. That is for sure. So Bill Belichick was on McAfee yesterday. I feel like he goes on every day. And he was asked about the Jets on Sunday.
Oh, so, he loves blowtorching the Jets. That's
so
all I can tell you.
Here were a couple, and then there's a reason why I'm playing this.
Tough day for the Jets. Used up all their timeouts in the first quarter. missed PAT. The scrambles, you know, May ran for more than he threw for. Just a lot of mistakes by the Jets.
And then he took kind of a little pause, then continued.
You know, you got to look at Jacoby, and then, you know, Riddick came in the game and just ran past the quarterback multiple times, whether it was May or Jacoby, and created those scramble lanes that that the Patriots took advantage of.
So Hassan Riddick had a reply. This was on, I believe this was on X. He said, "Hey, someone call Bill Belichick and give him a job. Seems like he's home bored and can't keep me out of his mouth. Come up for air, why don't you?"
Yeah, I mean, Hassan, shut your face, will you? You blew the whole season. You did this stupid holdout. You showed up. You're not in shape. You'd had zero impact on the game. Yep. Bill Belichick, who, of course, is revered as one of the best head coaches ever, if not the best, had a criticism of you, and you got to go and defend yourself. You're like, nobody's taking you seriously.
Man, this Bill Belichick, boy, he's just blowtorching a lot of people.
It's,
I mean,
great.
It's just nonstop.
I love it.
He's like a media soundbite every day.
Good for him.
Every,
I mean, because that's not what he was when he was a coach. I actually did have unique soundbites on the Cincinnati, things of that nature. Do your job, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but he's got to say stuff. He's got to have opinions on TV, and he's doing that. I would pay attention to the franchises that are having bad seasons that might have a coaching change that he's not criticizing as much.
I haven't heard a word about Dallas, have you?
I don't know. I have not heard all of these interviews. Usually play the local stuff.
Bill Belichick's not going to Jacksonville.
Shad Khan, pay him a lot of money, man.
Is that where he wants his career to end?
Jacksonville? You can say whatever you want about Trevor Lawrence. He does have maybe the makings of some guy that could be pretty decent.
It just doesn't feel right.
You think he's going to go to Dallas?
I've been saying that for 2 years. Yes, him or Dion. Those have been my two. I thought after my... Well, I didn't say that's a good one, but I'm telling you, I think it's either him or Dion will be the next head coach of the Cowboys. And if they don't figure things out, that might be sooner rather than later. We shall see. Knicks-Cavs last night. This is not what you want to hear or see.
Another gritty performance from Josh Hart, but he asked out of the game, which shows you something... It is hurting. Watch as he comes up the floor after that collision, and he says to Tom Thibodeau, "Tips, get me out." So he's now going back to the Knick locker room.
Yeah, and he already had ankle issues going into this, so he did leave the game. 110-104, the Cavs beat the Knicks last night. Darius Garland was 12 of 19 for 34 points. Donovan Mitchell had 25. Here's Tom Thibodeau's. What happened?
Missed some shots. Gave him some easy ones in transition. So, you know, that hurt us.
Jalen Brunson was in and out of the lineup as well, but was fine. Went back to the locker room briefly. He wound up scoring on the night. He had 21 points, but he was 8 of 24 shooting. He says just strange.
I thought it was honestly just a weird game from start to finish. It was kind of a grinded out game. Had a 30-point lead and then let it slip away. But,
yeah, they were up 72-59. They were up, and then Cleveland came back from that point. The Knicks were 9 of 28 from three-point range in this game. Know who the head coach of Cleveland is? Kenny Atkinson, the guy that was jettisoned from Brooklyn, as we know. He was talking about Garland defensively more so than what he did on the other end.
Everyone's going to talk about his offensive game. I'm going to talk about his two stops, his two blocks at the end of the game. Those were huge plays. They're trying to post Bridges up against him, and he stood his ground. So.
How about that? So there you go. The Cavaliers off to a 4-0 start. The Knicks now 1-2. The Knicks go to Miami tomorrow night. Did CeeLo play any of Dwayne Wade talking about his statue yesterday?
We talked about it. He did not play the cuts. I mean,
I didn't know if those were old or not. I'll play them next hour.
I mean, it looks like Dave Sims.
it doesn't look like him, that's for sure.
I mean, it is. And some of the memes that were out there yesterday were just absolutely hilarious. They got to do something about that. They can't leave that up there.
Understood. I'll have some of him next hour. I will also have Trayvon Diggs on Micah Parsons podcast talking about these nuts.
Yeah, that's right.
A reporter from the other night. I'll have that next hour as well. We'll have some Jeter, A-Rod, and David Ortiz next hour. Reaction from the World Series. You got the Nets playing the Nuggets tonight on 94.7 The Block and streaming on 94.7 The Block on the free Odyssey app. The Rangers skate in Washington tonight, and the Islanders take on the Ducks.
So that reporter that Trayvon Diggs said talk about these nuts too. Yeah. A Hofstra grad.
Oh, really?
Yeah, how about that? From Hofstra to these nuts.
How about that? Pretty and I good. Guess he must live out there because Trayvon Diggs knew him, so he must be a Cowboys reporter.
Yeah, he is for like one of the local TV stations.
Got it.
Yeah, so good for him.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network.
You know, I was just thinking, watching these games.
Yeah.
I mean, I really believe that if the Mets would have made it to the World Series, they would have beat the Yankees.
Man, you know, it's funny you say that because I'm thinking the same thing last night, and I'm driving in, and I'm like, don't be that guy today. Don't do it. But I agree with you. I'm sorry. That, and we're never going to know. There's nothing you can prove, and it doesn't really matter to Yankees fans. But after watching what I've seen so far, and the Mets having beat the Yankees five times, they were 5-0 against the Yankees in the regular season,
and they just absolutely hammered Flaherty at Citi Field
for Game 5 to send it back to L.A. Yeah, I mean, even before this series, I felt like whoever's coming. I said it. Whoever came out of the National League was going to win the World Series, but yeah, I mean, that's the way you, but the Mets also, to be fair, the Mets got hammered in every game that they lost in that series. They got pushed around by the Dodgers as well, and they didn't deserve to win that series, but I mean, they made it a series. They took one in, and they took game two in LA. They came back, you know, they did win game five after being down 3-1, and they in a big way, in a statement game in front of their fans. And, you know, they had Sean Manaea on the mound in a game six in a bullpen game. You felt like maybe they could get to a game seven and then anything, all bets are off. But obviously Manaea was not Manaea, and the Dodgers offense did what it did. But
I mean, the starting pitching for the Mets and the Yankees, unfortunately, just didn't hold up. You know, it's interesting listening to all the experts, and I guess we talk about baseball a lot here, so I guess you consider us somewhat experts. But we all thought that, oh, the starting pitching for the respective New York teams is definitely an advantage for them going into their playoff series against the Dodgers. And it hasn't turned out that way.
No, and it's really this Dodgers offense has to be given a lot of credit. I mean, they're relentless, you know, throughout the entire lineup. I mean, they got a guy like Tommy Edman who was hitting cleanup against the Mets. He's hitting ninth last night. I mean, just you got a guy in Andy Páez who ends up playing in that game five against the Mets, where the Mets won, but he hits two home runs in that game. Like, Kike Hernandez is generally down at the bottom of the lineup, and he is hitting. You know, Max Muncy's fifth or sixth, he's always hitting. In the Yankees' bottom of the order, I mean, Austin Wells is just a complete black hole right now offensively. Obviously, you know, Trevino, when he starts last night, he can't hit the ball. Anthony Rizzo, if you see him just happen to fall into one, you're like, oh man, I mean, that's great. It looks like Anthony Rizzo from a million years ago. Bottom of the lineup produces nothing for the Yankees, where the Dodgers are just one after another, after another, after another, after another. And anybody could do it. I mean, you're thinking, like, even Teoscar Hernandez, who was having a miserable postseason, you know, at any point he could wake up and just smack the ball around. He's probably their most consistent hitter in the regular season. So they're just so good from top to bottom offensively. And, you know, they've done enough with the pitching where, you know, I mean, Walker Buehler, that's back-to-back good starts for him in the postseason, where they were really worried about him in L.A.
Right. And like I said, they don't have three of their top pitchers. They went out and rebuilt the bullpen. They were moving and shaking all year long. They got so much money invested in this team that, you know, they were not going to let the thing go by the wayside because of injuries. You know, they were going to go out and get people, and it's just amazing what they've done. And, you know, their ability to make contact and their ability to come up with big hits. It's not like they're beating the Yankees 10-0. It's not that. But I thought this was going to be so much more of an offensive series than it has been.
Yeah.
Especially from the Yankees' perspective. And just the swing and misses are just so, like, infuriating.
Yeah, and I loved the Yankees last night. I thought they were going to hit. I thought they were going to win. I really, truly believe that at the very least they were going to win last night, and they just didn't. Even when they were down 2-0 after the Freeman home run, I was like, man, I still think the Yankees are going to make this a game, and took to the ninth inning for them to even score. Radamus in Houston. What's going on, Radamus?
Hey, before I start, whoever's controlling the board, please turn me down because I am so pissed right now. Yo, Boomer, Gio, what the heck, bro? Pack it up. Remember what you were saying, Gio? Oh, put the World Series tag on the grass. Do me a favor, scrape that crap up. Scrape it up. Don't turn on the lights in Yankee Stadium today. Just tell the Dodgers to fly to L.A., call Ice Cube, give them the trophy. Oh, my God, man, the body language is garbage. Freaking, I told you this a long time ago. Do not re-sign Judge. I don't care what he does all season. Giancarlo, my man, thank you so much. I appreciate you. We look like crap. Why is freaking Cole not pitching tonight? What are we doing? What are we doing? And Boomer, Shador Sanders, welcome to New York.
What did he say? What was the end of that? To who? Welcome to New York? I don't know. I missed that, but
I have no idea.
He's pissed off. We love Radamus, and he's the wow guy, and he's the greatest, and he moved to Houston. He joined us at the boat show. He left his pregnant wife alone in her third trimester to hang out with us at the boat party. But he's pissed off today, and I don't remember if he was saying don't re-sign Judge or not. Obviously, they needed to re-sign him, but it's crazy for a guy to be as dominant as he is to be in this big of a slump in the postseason. And I know the comparisons have been made to Barry Bonds early on in his career, winning MVPs, couldn't do anything in the playoffs. Obviously, A-Rod for the longest time. But, I mean, it is, they have gotten to the point now where they're not even scared of him. Like, we watch an entire regular season where, you know, they'd still pitch to him, but, you know, pitchers were scared. If they made a mistake, he was going to hit it 400 feet. They're now just challenging him.
Like, it doesn't matter. Like, they're not afraid of him. It's like they got confidence. It's like they're looking at Trevino up there and not Aaron Judge.
I would just say, I know that there's nothing worse than watching your team get destroyed by a better team, because, you know, I had to deal with that with the Rangers the last few years, especially last year against Florida, where it was so frustrating, and you're right there, and you just can't pull it out, and they end up becoming the eventual NHL Stanley Cup champions. This is like, your Yankee fans got to realize, you made it to the World Series. You made it to where you haven't been in a long time. Now, getting over that hump is going to be the big question going forward next year, assuming that they lose this. But I would say that, you know, the fact that this lineup has just got so many holes in it, in if they play home run ball, it goes back to, like, all the frustrations over the last 5, 6, 7 years with this team, that they don't have contact hitters. They don't do what the Dodgers do and what the, you know, what the Royals did to the Mets back in 2015. That's not how this team is built. And quite frankly, their starting pitching has been less than impressive. You know, they gave Rodon all that money. You know, Schmidt comes out last night. He's all amped up. He walks a hobbled, I wouldn't say hobbled, but an injured Shohei Ohtani. It's like, what? Make him swing the bat? Did you see when he did swing the bat, mm-hmm. actually, eventually in the game?
Yeah.
He was grimacing.
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, no matter if it's that front shoulder or back shoulder when you're a lefty, I mean, the way that he swings, you know, and that swing speed and that bat speed and the violence in which he hits the baseball, it's going
to
hurt him.
You know what I'm going to say? I'm going to say it comes down really to two decisions that Aaron Boone made in game one, and I think it just basically impacted this series. And one was taking Garrett Cole out when he did, and the other one, and I keep saying, I said it on Friday before we left here, that if Nestor Cortes is going to be on the roster and they bring him in a spot that he has never been in before, I wouldn't trust it. Now, he did good last night, but that was a different spot that he came in.
Mm.
You know, they brought him in the bottom of the 10th. I mean, like, after 6 weeks of not pitching, and, you know, credit to him for wanting to be a part of it and wanting to do it. But, man, oh, man, oh, man, those two decisions may have ended up flipping the momentum. And I know it's hard to think that way, but that's how I felt when I saw it.